Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present to you once again Dr. Nick Begich, the author, along with Gene Manning, of Angels Don't Play This Harp, published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press, copyright 1995. Dr. Begich, welcome back to our airwaves.
Good to be with you.
We have spoken about Project Harp in three previous interviews, and by the way, for listeners who might be new to the program, those interviews, as well as the book Angels Don't Play This Harp, are available. We'll tell you more about that later. But for the benefit of listeners who may be tuned in for the first time, Dr. Begich, or who have not heard about Project Harp, why don't we tell them a little bit, as best we can in the time that we have, about what the project is about. Now, first of all, it's HARP, not as in the instrument, but it's HARP, which stands for?
The High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, which is a project operating here in Alaska by the Navy and Air Force. And the intention is to utilize a really new technology in terms of weapons systems. And this particular technology that's being tested here is really a precursor to much of what's been touted in the past as Star Wars or the Strategic Defense Initiative. What HARP is providing is essentially basic research that will feed that initiative as well as a number of other projects of interest to the military.
Now, the book is subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology. Can you briefly tell us who Nikola Tesla was and how Project HARP, again, a military project being run by the Navy and Air Force, is a development of his technology?
Yeah, Tesla was the person responsible for the development, for instance, of AC current and the transmission system for AC current, which is what most of our households and businesses run on. And he was also just way ahead of his time in terms of a number of areas. And one of the areas that he had particular interest in were the development of high-energy weapon systems. And this is a man that lived in the late 1800s, doing most of his work between 1880 and 1930. And, you know, the man had a concept where you could utilize electrical energy and create weapon systems that would do such things as knock out aircraft at distance, melt engines using electromagnetic fields of various kinds. And out of that sort of work that he was doing, he was a stimulus for a lot of modern-day inventors, including an inventor, Bernard Eastland, who envisioned a system of converting electrical energy into radio frequency energy, which is energy vibrating at a very specific frequency range that would then cause various atmospheric and other impacts to the natural environment, would actually affect creating a weapon system where the machine on the ground actually couples with part of the Earth's environment and manipulates that portion of the environment for a specific weapons effect. And that really is what HARP is. So it's sort of the outgrowth of some of the things that Tesla envisioned, and in fact many people think have been the ongoing work of the military ever since.
For those who might find some of the subsequent discussion a little bit fantastic, we might want to mention that even though Tesla lived a long time ago, for example, Mark Twain was a good friend of his, Tesla died in 1943, and yet still much of his work is classified more than a half century after his death. So if some of what we're about to talk about seems strange or incredible, it's not altogether surprising, given the fact that a lot of what Tesla worked on is still a matter of national security and secrecy. The Project HARP has been characterized as an RMA, a revolution in military affairs. It's sort of a one-stop, multi-purpose weapon system. And among the projected uses is for over-the-horizon surveillance, in particular vis-a-vis nuclear missiles or strategic missiles, and also for a type of surveillance known as deep Earth tomography. Can you briefly tell us what each of those is about, Nick?
Sure. The over-the-horizon technology that HARP offers is far superior to anything we've had in the past in terms of what it can do. You can literally look from ionospheric levels, which start at about 30 miles above the Earth's surface, all the way down to treetop levels and around the curvature of the Earth, so you can see any incoming object like cruise missiles or ICBMs, for that matter, and everything in between. You can also use the same system by creating a little different energy field. It'll create an energy field around all of those incoming objects that then can be measured with, say, satellite-based gamma-ray detectors and other diagnostic equipment. You can determine which of those objects are carrying nuclear payloads. The other thing that you can do with that same range of technology as it applies to HARP is you can also increase the power sufficiently to cause computer errors on the computers that control the flight paths of those incoming objects, thereby causing them to crash. That's sort of the over-the-horizon application, so you can detect, discriminate, and then destroy objects all with the same system. The Earth-penetrating tomography is the idea of looking into the Earth several kilometers or miles deep. This is would be like X-raying the Earth in the vernacular. And what they're doing is using a signal from this radio transmitter, and the transmitter sends the signal up like an upside-down pyramid with the wide end at the ionosphere is a normal radio frequency transmitter. With HARP, it's the opposite. You're focusing the energy, so it's more directed. And when you hit the ionosphere with that energy, you can pulse it or cause bursts of energy to cause the ionosphere to vibrate. It will then send back a signal to the Earth that penetrates the Earth and sea, and this is used for both communicating with submarines and getting a sort of a read on what's underground in terms of tunnels, ground strata, underground nuclear facilities, and the like.
One of the projected capabilities of Project HARP involves not only altering the brainwave patterns of individuals, but potentially populations, in other words, mind control.
Well, you know, the same application that we were just talking about, this is for Earth-penetrating tomography, you're actually operating, and for communication with submarines for that matter, you're operating in a frequency range of about between 1 and 20 or 30 hertz or pulses per second or vibrations per second. What that happens to correlate to is the predominant brainwave frequencies in human beings. And what research has historically shown at Yale University and other prestigious universities around the country is that pulsed radio frequency at very low power densities can, in fact, change the behavior of humans directly. And what you have with HARP is a system that will be providing energy within the right frequency range and at sufficient quantities or densities to create exactly that kind of effect.
One of the more terrifying projected uses concerns, again, utilizing electromagnetic energy, electromagnetic radiation, to actually alter the body chemistry and redistribute the charged ions in a human being with potentially lethal effect.
Yeah, this is this is a whole new area for the military. In terms of public discussion, although it's been an area of research for military planners for really decades, the whole idea that the human being might be manipulated by other than things that pierce tissue like bullets and ordnance, this is the whole basis for, if people remember back a number of years ago, the neutron bomb being able to destroy tissue and yet leave property intact, if you will. But the same idea is advanced in other weapon systems where you actually manipulate the biochemical makeup of humans to cause changes in that makeup, causing chemical imbalances or changes that aren't natural or toxic conditions for that matter. You can do do any number of things. And the whole root of knowledge here to know how to manipulate body physiology for damaging effects with these new technologies, unfortunately, is not available to people involved in the healing arts, because these same technologies and knowledge would be quite beneficial.
We alluded earlier to the use of electromagnetic radiation as a device for altering the human mind for mind control. One beneficial application of that technology that took place years ago was the neurophone.
Right. That's a device that basically transfers sound information on an ultrasonic carrier in a way that the brain can decode the signal and understand the sound without utilizing the normal hearing pathways and normal hearing mechanism. But there's also things out there now. There's electroacupuncture, laser acupuncture, electro-laser combinations. There are a number of therapies being used in Europe and in Asia, some for quite a number of years, that capitalize on this same knowledge. There's healing of bones and building of bone tissue using what are called cold lasers, which is all relatively new and yet does not line up with classical models in terms of how the body operates, and has really been sort of an eye-opener for many, many health practitioners, but again shows up in military literature going back to the 1960s, 70s.
Nikola Tesla, whom we alluded to earlier and from whose work Project HARP is derived to a considerable extent, is reliably reported to have caused a small earthquake in New York City in 1896. One of the speculative elements concerning Project HARP that we had talked about in our previous discussions concerned the application of that technology to cause earthquakes, something that the U.S. and Soviet Union actually had a treaty about in the mid-1970s.
Right. The idea of using geophysical warfare or manipulating the planet for weapons applications was subject to a treaty years ago, back in the mid-70s. It's one of the reasons that so many people around the world are interested in what we're doing, because HARP, one of the concerns with HARP is that with the amount of power that's being utilized, that if you set up a resonant frequency in the Earth-penetrating tomography mode, for instance, that you can actually trigger a geophysical event. And one of the specialists in earth-penetrating tomography who's done extensive work in this area, it's one of his major concerns about HARP, is that here we have a system of unprecedented energy densities with the capability of operating within a resonant frequency that could, in fact, trigger that kind of an event. And it's a matter of just getting a standing wave in resonance with the Earth. And that's exactly what Tesla had been talking about and what has been speculated about regarding his New York incident, but it certainly shows up in his own discussions of what was possible, and now here it is again, here it is happening, because now there's specialists in a modern context that can explain exactly how these events could and may have in fact occurred.
There are a number of unfortunate possible side effects that have been speculated about. Obviously, this technology is new, although there's been testing along these lines for decades, but there has been speculation concerning the possibility that this project could ultimately slow the Earth's rotation with considerably deleterious effect for humanity.
Yeah, that's an interesting speculation. I really don't know, so much, because to create the necessary factors, it would violate what we know or what we think we know about the Earth, certainly. And at the same time, it'll jump sort of where some of the leading-edge thinkers are in terms of what is the mechanics of the Earth in terms of its rotation, more like a motor, the way Tesla envisioned it, where these factors of additional energy will have a huge or disproportional effect than what other models might indicate. So it's hard to say on that one from my perspective, although, there's plenty of material out there that could lead one to that conclusion.
And I should stress that I'm not in a position to critically evaluate some of these speculative elements myself. But in reading your book and looking at the discussion of what some of the knowledgeable scientists in these fields are afraid of, it's truly hair-raising. Along those same lines, there's also been speculation about the possible effects of HARP on the Earth's magnetic field.
Right, and this is an important factor, because one of the ways that they intend to use HARP is to inject energy directly into those naturally occurring magnetic lines of force and actually use them sort of as waveguides for creating certain effects in the weapons regime. But once they start manipulating with those magnetic lines, it's really difficult to tell, what is too much energy, what happens to natural energy. The thing that is said by the military continuously is, hey, what we're doing is minor because it's nowhere near what nature can do. But the difference being, it's coherent or controlled energy. And this is the most important factor when we're looking at all of these things, because it's been discovered within the Earth, both by Tesla and modern scientists, that if you hit certain frequency ranges, you create energy releases that are unexpected and quite large. I'll give you an example. At Stanford in the early 80s, they were experimenting with VLF energy, which is very low frequency energy, and they were pushing it into the ionosphere, and they found out that when it connected with the very top of the ionosphere and the layer just above it, the magnetosphere, that a certain frequency range within that VLF range acted as a trigger or a primer on a bullet, by analogy, where energy was all of a sudden released and caused the signal to increase in power by up to 1,000 times. And that was a totally unexpected, again, a resonance effect by hitting a specific trigger frequency that was up till then unknown. So, these things are sort of being discovered by trial and error by these scientists that have discovered enough to lead one to believe that maybe we should slow down a little bit on the approach we're taking, particularly with the amount of energy involved here, because HARP is going to be producing in effect of radiated power between 1 and 3 billion watts in its first phase of operation. So this is an unprecedented amount of energy short of thermal nuclear detonations in the upper atmosphere.
There's also been speculation about a possible short-circuiting between the ionosphere, which is already very highly charged, and the Earth itself.
Yeah, this came up by one of the scientists independent of us that was looking at our work, and what he suggested and had been previously just suggested in the very far range of speculation, and granted, even he has said, you know, this is the worst-case scenario, but what he envisioned was possible was that this pathway of radio frequency energy coming up from the Earth would act like a shunt or a conductor and move energy then down to the Earth. And what's interesting about that, it's not just his speculation, but one of the key people on HARP in a document we recently ran into just before a hearing in Europe was a NATO document from France talking about utilizing radio frequency energy to shunt energy from the ionosphere down. Now, what is dangerous about this, if it makes contact and completes the circuit with the Earth, the speculation, and this is the speculative part, says that what will happen is it will begin to arc, or the charge will flow from the ionosphere to the Earth, which makes sense. I mean, if you know how circuits work, I mean, if you've got a pathway and a conductor. Except the visual effect of this would be the most powerful bolt of lightning you've ever seen striking the Earth 40 times a second at that particular point until all of the energy in the ionosphere were discharged or the circuit were broken. So that is an unbelievable amount of power and energy that would be released at that particular moment.
And we should stress that many of these possible side effects are speculative. On the other hand, no one is in a position to say this is not going to happen either.
Right, and at the same time, these are given these are worst-case scenarios, but they're being put forward by specialists within those given fields of science, and as really not just a warning, but a very real concern on their part. And the issue is, look, do we need this? Should we go this fast? What's the problem with waiting a little bit? And military tends to be a little overly zealous for their own reasons, which we can certainly appreciate. But at the same time, at this point, man has progressed well beyond the atomic age, if you will, to an age where the mechanisms that we're now tampering with truly put us at great peril and perhaps offer great opportunities as well. But we need to move slowly.
Another aspect of Project HARP that we should stress is that the projected use of this type of device extends to the United States as well. And in fact, there was a paper that was issued in the 1980s about the use of non-lethal weaponry, which perhaps belongs in quotes, and they had a preface by none other than Citizen Newt Gingrich, and the possible applications of some of these technologies in the United States should, I think, be touched on.
Right. In fact, it shows up not just in that document. That was Low-Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology, produced by Maxwell Air Force Base. But there were a series of conferences dealing with the Department of Justice and the Department of Defense in terms of technology transferred for non-lethal weapons. And these transfers actually have begun to take place in the case of devices that can, for instance, interfere with the car's ignition, causing it to stop, or are now being played with in some jurisdictions. The idea of some of these the stun weapons are sort of the outgrowth of that. But these more sophisticated weapons for crowd control and so on are now being contemplated for use. In fact, they show up even in the most recent document since publication of our book was a document, New World Vista, 1996, which actually talks about weapon systems that can change memories, alter memories of human beings and be used from a military perspective for training. From other people's perspective, it's a pretty unnerving idea that man is in possession of systems that can actually manipulate what goes on in the interior of a person's mind.
We should also note that one of the stated applications of Project HARP, and this is one of the more concrete applications, concerns using Project HARP to alter the weather for military purposes. This is one of the major thrusts of the technology.
Actually, that shows up all through, you know, in terms of what's possible at real high power levels. And the idea that HARP could be used for manipulating weather again violates that earlier treaty from the 70s that we were talking about. But then, you know, Perry, previous Security Defense was talking about this whole area as being one that was that should really be opened back up for discussion because the technology had advanced so far. And the thing is when you start utilizing these kinds of systems for weather modification, and I think everyone is now, at least fully cognizant of the fact that weather is interconnected on the planet. You don't play with it in one place without perhaps devastating effects in other parts of the planet. And El Nino, as a case in point, would be a modern example that everyone sees.
Bringing that very subject to the fore, obviously here in California, as I speak, in late June of 1998, we've been experiencing some very strange weather because of El Nino. And as I recall, Dr. Begich, 1998 was the year in which HAARP was scheduled to go online.
Yeah, and it has been intermittently operated throughout the year. And one of the things that we participated in now a year ago May was a major discussion in Europe on climate change. And the debate centered on how much was man-made and how much was natural. And I think it's fair to say it is a combination of both. And now I think we can also say that some of these new technologies that are being introduced might be having unanticipated or perhaps deliberate effects. HAARP is a case in point because the literature does show this system can be used for manipulating weather. And the only question in our minds is, has it at this point been used?
Obviously, we're not. I don't want to put either yourself or myself in the position of sounding like Chicken Little, and we're saying, "My God, you know, this technology is causing the weird weather we're having." On the other hand, it certainly is a question that I have, and I know I've been queried by a number of listeners on that regard. Do I think that this strange weather could be connected to Project HAARP? And I tell them I have exactly that same question.
Yeah, and you know, the problem that we've had is the lack of independent monitoring by people with an interest in knowing the answers to exactly that question. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, we know that it has capability, but without that independent monitoring, it would be it's just impossible for us to definitively say, yes, HAARP is connected to what we're observing. But I will say this, is, you know, if you go back just 10 years to this whole El Nino discussion, many people remember that it was supposed to take 50 years to raise an ocean temperature 1 degree, and now I believe that's being somewhat rethought, given the fact that ocean temperatures in Alaska, say, over the last year have increased 10 to 15 degrees. El Nino was a much more dramatic effect than anyone ever expected, although you can go back to our work of 3 or 4 years ago, and we've said, and we continue to say, what we've seen so far is nothing compared to what we're going to see in the coming years, just given the degree in which a man's interaction now, in addition, new interactions are causing great imbalance on the planet.
Albert Einstein, with regard to the development of atomic weapons, observed that everything has changed but our way of thinking. And I think that with regard to Project HAARP and other technologies now either being developed or coming online, I think that statement echoes or resonates, shall we say, utilizing the prevailing term, even more profoundly than it did in Einstein's time.
You know, that's really, it is, you know, I mean, we're not talking about going to the cave next door with clubs anymore. We're talking about systems that have a huge, huge potential capability. And the wisdom being attached to the weapons that we've devised and created, that's where the disconnect is. And I think that's what Einstein was talking about. And I think that's really something that all of us need to refocus on. You know, what we can do doesn't mean we should do. And I think that's a big part of where this, where a lot of this technology goes.
Nick, in this part of the interview, I'd like to tell people about where they can get Angels Don't Play This HAARP, and I'm also going to mention where they can get tapes of our previous interviews, because happily, your work, at least outside of the United States, has not been ignored to the extent that it apparently has been in the U.S. We'll talk about some of the vistas that you've been able to open up in the second half of our interview. Could you tell people how they can get a hold of Angels Don't Play This HAARP?
Sure. We have an 800 number. It's 888-690-1277. We also have a website at www.earthpulse.com. And you can also get our information by mail at P.O. Box 201393, Anchorage, Alaska, 9520.
If you could repeat all of those things, the phone number, the website, and the post office box more slowly, Dr. Begich, for people who are scribbling away or perhaps
sure,
in their cars
yeah.
and have suddenly veered over to the shoulder so they can note this stuff without disturbing traffic.
All right. The phone number again is 888-690-1277. And the website is www.earthpulse.com. And the mailing address is P.O. Box 201393, Anchorage, Alaska 99520.
And there are three previous interviews with Dr. Begich detailing Project HARP in much greater length than we've been able to do in this interview due to the limitations of time. You can get a hold of those interviews from Spitfire. That's one word. It's a tape duplication service that stocks the various tapes that I've done. Spitfire is one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179. That's Post Office Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N. Capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Once again, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. There's also an email address for Spitfire. It's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. And the KFJC website crashed a short time ago. We'll have that in about month or so, and people can see a list of and description of all of the programs available from Spitfire at www.kfjc.org. That's www.kfjc.org. That should be up and running in about a month or so. Dr. Begich, what we're going to do is we're going to turn over this tape, and in our next half hour, we're going to take a look at something that's more optimistic and more pleasant than the terrifying possibilities of Project HARP that we've been looking at, and that is that your work is finally beginning to get some of the credit that it's due.
All right.
That, however, will be in the next half hour. We've been speaking with Dr. Nick Begich, the author, along with Gene Manning of Angels Don't Play This HARP, published in soft cover by the Earth Pulse Press, copyright 1995. For Nick Begich, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.